Hey everyone, welcome back to another week of our study group. I am so excited for the section that we will begin tonight. We definitely won't get through the whole thing because it's a little longer, but it's called What Are the Characteristics of God's Teachers? And it is part four in the manual for teachers. Before we dive in reading, let's do as we always do and come together for a few mindful moments. I invite you to join me in turning attention from without to within. What we're doing together is nothing small. This is a big deal. This act of pausing and turning within, this act of turning our attention from without to within, to the place where the Holy Spirit abides in each of us. And the fact that we're doing this together, it's really meaningful. Finding your willingness. It only needs to be a tiny little bit. But as you perhaps think of your day, the past, concerns for the future, tomorrow, offering our tiny willingness to the Holy Spirit to see it all differently. To allow it all to be used on behalf of the awakening of all of us, not just ourselves alone. With open minds, open hearts, open hands, offering everything to the Holy Spirit, and trusting that no matter what is showing up in our experience, the outcome is certain. Healing and wholeness and our complete remembrance of truth is here already. In this moment. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Holy Spirit in charge by our request. And I invite you to join me in just taking a few deep breaths. Slowly just allowing your eyes to open as we return our attention to our perception of right here, right now. It's so good to see all of you. So, as I mentioned already, we are reading part four. What are the characteristics of God's teachers? It's part four in the manual, page 1576 in the CE. If you're reading from a different edition, I'm sorry, I don't have the page number handy, but it's pretty easy to find. So let's go ahead and dive in. This, as I said before, is one of my favorite sections. What are the characteristics of God's teachers? The surface traits of God's teachers are not at all alike. They do not look alike to the body's eyes. They come from vastly different backgrounds. Their experiences of the world vary greatly. And their superficial personalities are quite distinct. Nor at the beginning stages of their functioning as teachers of God have they yet acquired the deeper characteristics that will establish them as what they are. God gives special gifts to his teachers because they have a special role in his plan for atonement. Their specialness is, of course, only temporary, set in time as a means of leading out of time. These special gifts, born in the holy relationship toward which the teaching-learning situation is geared, become characteristic of all teachers of God who have advanced in their own learning. In this respect, they are all alike. So we'll be reading about those characteristics in this section. All differences among the sons of God are temporary. Nevertheless, in time, it can be said that the advanced teachers of God have the following characteristics. Number one, trust. This is the foundation on which their ability to fulfill their function rests. Perception is the result of learning. In fact, perception is learning because cause and effect are never separate. The teachers of God have trust in the world because they have learned that it is not governed by the laws the world made up. It is governed by a power that is in them, but not of them. It is this power that keeps all things safe. It is through this power that the teachers of God look on a forgiven world. And there I shall pause. So, teachers of God come from all over, all religions, no religion, as we've previously read. Our personalities are all different. And as we embark on this journey, we develop these characteristics. We embody these characteristics, the first one of which we're reading about is trust. In my masterclass that I'm currently working on and in other workshops that I've done, sometimes I'll have people, you know, we'll write a bunch of things down like trust and willingness, and we'll rank ourselves, you know, from 1 to 10. How strong do we feel with this today? Or how, you know, how little, knowing that something like willingness, literally you need like 0.1, a tiny bit of willingness, and that's all that matters. But trust is something that I consistently score the lowest on. So that, you know, as I look at this and I look ahead at the other characteristics, trust has definitely been the lowest. And yet it's what is being built in every single moment, in every single experience, in every single miracle that we have. It is the building of trust. I picture it like one stone at a time, building a rock solid foundation in spirit instead of that shabby, muddy straw foundation of the ego. So this trust is building through our experiences. It's not something that we can will ourselves into. It would be nice if we could. Maybe some people can. I cannot. For me, it's been through my learning, through my experiences, that my trust has grown. And just like it says, we start to trust in the world because we learn that it's not governed by the ego's laws. It's governed by God. Now, I have to say that it was just sometimes, you know, in reading the course and studying the course, we internalize ideas and then don't necessarily remember like the quote or the sentence that that idea came from. And I had a moment while I was reading this before our group, because these two sentences, well, these few senses. You know, we have trust in the world because we've learned that it's not governed by the laws the world made up. It's governed by a power that is in them, but not of them. It is this power that keeps all things safe. This power, the Holy Spirit, I've said so many times that, you know, in repurposing and handing everything over to the Holy Spirit, everything, being completely transparent and open-handed, you know, open-hearted, open-minded with the Holy Spirit, that repurposing that happens, I've always thought of it as everything that I give over to the Holy Spirit keeps it safe. And I forgot that this sentence is where, you know, I got that idea from. So it was just such a nice, oh, wow, seeing it in writing. It is this power that keeps all things safe. So what that means to me is that no matter what happens, you know, in the dream, in form, truth is true, is true, is true. Nothing can change it. There is nothing that we can do here to change that truth. So, and it's through the Holy Spirit, through this power, that we learn to look upon a forgiven world. So that was just very striking for me. Before I keep reading, anybody else have any comments or questions so far? Paula, did I see your hands?
I had an experience today. We have a family member who was really on her way out. And my niece and her husband and family have been going every day to see her. And I've known her for such a long time and I just love her. And I wanted to go see her, but I had a lot of hesitancy because I felt, you know, they're running back and forth. I don't want to get into the mix. I don't want to confuse them. And then I just kept getting, you got to trust them. You have to trust them to handle their lives and what's going on, and trust them that maybe they would even want me to come and see her and be with her. And darn if it didn't turn out that way exactly. I called this morning and said, and I was very honest too, because I was thinking, well, I'll just go to the nursing home and I'll ask if I can come in and see her, but I didn't feel comfortable with that. So I called my niece and I said, you know, I would really like to come see Betty today. And I don't want to go there by myself. I would really like it if you would go with me. And I felt really nervy asking her that question, because I know it's been, she was, yes, of course, you come up here, we'll go for lunch after. It turned out to be, and my daughter actually came along too, and she was very apprehensive about seeing Betty in this condition. Mm-hmm. I tell you, Corinne, it couldn't have turned out better. Mm-hmm. This woman was not communicating any longer. She seemed to be really out of touch totally. We got her to laugh. We did some reminiscing about family. It just turned out to be the most miraculous day. But it started out with being honest about what I wanted and trusting them.
Oh, Paula.
So there you go. I mean, that's what this is all about.
And miracles as expressions of love comes to mind just hearing your story. I mean, what expressions of love in all directions?
I tell you, I was nervous about seeing her so shut down and really bad off. But boy, did that spirit come through. And we included her in the entire conversation. We kept asking her questions. She couldn't speak, you know, but she'd nod her head. And then she'd start laughing. It was just wonderful. I'm just thrilled with the way it went.
What a joy. What an expression of just love and light. And again, I think of that interlocking chain of miracles, that interlocking chain of forgiveness that you brought, just with how everything unfolded. You brought her laughter. She was laughing. Like, that's gorgeous.
We had chills by the three of us when we left that room. We were like, oh my God, that went so well.
That's awesome, Paula. Thank you so much for sharing. I love your stories. I really do. I really do. Oh, wow. Anyone else? You know, just along the same lines, Paula, I'll just share. And I don't know that I talked about this that much last year. It would have been March 2020, actually right before the pandemic began and the months leading up to that. A acquaintance who I went to grad school with, we didn't have like a close friendship, but she was, she got diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. And through her diagnosis, she let me in to her experience. I may have mentioned this because she made YouTube videos about her experience. She was very much in teacher mode the whole time of normalizing the process of what she was going through. And I have to tell you that, you know, this work with the course, in any other time, I could not have even said the phrase lung cancer without like a shudder of fear come through me. And this was such a miraculous experience to the point where she actually asked me to, if she wanted to do assisted suicide, if I would help. And thank goodness it did not come to that, because I was, that was a little, I was, you know, quite floored. But just the fact that she asked me and let me in to such an intimate part of her journey, just really, the whole experience really showed me just how, just miracles and the Holy Spirit and being tuned into that, and how, you know, we are here to be miracle workers, and that our fears can fall away and we can stand in trust and, you know, in that love with the Holy Spirit and do as we are directed to do. So you just reminded me of that, Paula. So thank you. Thanks for letting me share. Okay, let's read another paragraph. I don't see any hands. Okay, paragraph number 2. When this power, capital P power, the Holy Spirit, when this power has once been experienced, it is impossible to trust one's own petty strength again. Who would attempt to fly with the tiny strength of a sparrow when the mighty wings of an eagle have been given him? And who would place his faith in the shabby offerings of the ego when the gifts of God are laid before him? What is it that induces them to make the shift? First, they must go through what might be called a period of undoing. This need not be painful, but it usually is so experienced. It seems as if things are being taken away, and it is rarely understood initially that their lack of value is merely being recognized. How can lack of value be perceived unless the perceiver is in a position where he must see things in a different light? He is not yet at a point at which he can make the shift entirely internally. And so the plan will sometimes call for changes in what seem to be external circumstances. These changes are always helpful. When the teacher of God has learned that much, he goes on to the second stage. And I'll pause there. So one of the things that I love so much about this section, what we're going to be reading in the upcoming paragraphs, are these stages in the development of trust. And just a quick overview, we just read about a period of undoing. We'll next read about a period of sorting out, a period of relinquishment, a period of settling down, another period of unsettling, and then a period of achievement. And I think a period of undoing is probably the one that we all can relate to. Like, we can probably come up with multiple examples, each of us, of this period of undoing. It says it doesn't have to be painful, but usually it's experienced, because what do? We get comfortable here. We try to plant our roots here. In this world, we try to call this home and we try to plant our roots here, and we can't do that because our roots aren't here. Our roots are in God. So the more we sink our roots or try to sink our roots into the ego foundation, you know, in this world, the more we're going to find that, you know, that that's not possible. And it might come through as this period of undoing where things are starting to shift and change, which we don't have to experience painfully, but like it says, sometimes we do. And that sometimes that calls for changes in external circumstances. These changes can be helpful, are always helpful, it says. And we'll get into the next stage in just a moment. But I know for me, I can think of many periods of undoing.
Corinth, yes. What page are we on?
Hi, Christine. Do you have the CE edition?
I have the
FIP, the blue book. So you'll have to go to the Manual for Teachers, Part 4, Section 1 on Trust, and it's Paragraph 4.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. I'll have I'll get my blue book out next time, just because I have a feeling now we're going to be starting probably midsection next time. So I'll get that book out. So any comments or questions or thoughts about this, Mary Beth?
A couple things really came in what we just read here now, but you know, with listening to Paula's story before, I had an experience just this past week. I'm in Tennessee and I drove up to New England to visit family wedding and stuff and friends. And I had periods of fear going up there, but I've been practicing for a while. Holy Spirit, I'm willing to see this differently. And I had this, it just always changes, you know, the experience that I have. And I was thinking about, you know, through this power, the teachers of God look on a forgiven world, and it totally changed anything. And I had the most amazing vacation throughout it all, you know, and I went to the Holy Spirit often, and that perception, you know, that my perception was always changed, and it was beautiful. But what you just read about the having everything removed, you know, that ego, just everything stripped of its value. I went through that a few years ago, and it's reading this paragraph now, it just really makes a lot of sense. I've only been a student of the course for just about 2 years now. And it was about 3 years ago when everything was being ripped away from me. I had to look at things differently and lose that. And I could sense the beauty, the value in losing everything, that it was part of the spiritual journey. And then I land in A Course in Miracles study group and it felt like home, you know? And so just seeing that this first, you have to do this, it followed my journey. So just wanted to share that because this weekend, using that, you know, going to Holy Spirit, willing to see this differently, it was just a totally different experience all around for the last 12 days.
Wow. Oh, that's beautiful, Mary Beth. Thank you so much for sharing. You know, you're speaking about like losing everything and just everything getting shaken up. I have found myself now being in a place of like literally hanging on to nothing, not even A Course in Miracles, not even what I think A Course in Miracles says, not even what I think, you know, the right interpretation is. Some of you have been participating in the Love Lens, and we're still, you know, slowly making our way to doing some more episodes. But in this journey, at some point, I don't know how this is all going to come out, if I'll do a podcast, I have no idea, but there's been a lot unfolding where I came to a point of even questioning, like, the course, like, you know, with everything happening in the world. What I found was that I was like, Holy Spirit, if there's something else that you want me to do, if you want me to put down everything that I'm doing and you're telling me to go do whatever, I will do whatever. Like I will listen and follow you. And I literally like let go of A Course in Miracles, and it's rebuilding for me. The best way that I can say it is just like, it's coming. I'm letting the Holy Spirit rebuild things. I let it all fall apart and there wasn't fear there. And the Holy Spirit is, I don't know, things are being just reorganize. And so like with that, with this value of losing everything, if we ever find ourselves in that position where it seems like things are just like, nothing's working out, things are falling away, that little thought of like, okay, maybe I can just let it all go and let the Holy Spirit rebuild it for me, because that's what's been happening with me. It's why I've been quiet and I haven't been podcasting or blogging, you know, in a long time. I'm going through this, I went through a period of doing, I don't know where I am at this point. I'd have to think about it as we read through these, but it's Corinth, all getting rebuilt.
Corinth,
yeah.
I think about the thing of, I want to see things differently. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going through seeing, you know, everything you value, everything you believe in. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that, Christine. That's it. And what's coming through instead is big, and I'm still in it. So, you know, I'll share as prompted perhaps down the road, but thank you, Christine. Dave. You're still muted.
Thanks. So this period of undoing could be physical, but it could also be emotional or psychically
oh, yeah.
oriented, I guess. And let's see, I just the other day, I've been doing the exercise 153, I think it is, or no, let's see. Anyway, it's my mind holds only what I think with God. And it's like my foundation is like coming apart. It's like, and I know that in the course it says somewhere, whatever your reactions to the Holy Spirit's voice may be, you know, that doesn't matter. Your blackest nightmares don't matter. Kind of a thing, but it does not feel good, I got to tell you. And I'm just wondering if you could comment on that at all.
Dave, I hear you, and it does not feel good. When it's, I mean, whatever combination of physical or, you know, mental or spiritual, like, you know, however the period of undoing is showing up, in any combination, any one or any combination of those things, no, it does not feel good. And my best advice to you is to cling to the Holy Spirit. Center the Holy Spirit, talk to the Holy Spirit or Jesus or whoever it is that you're comfortable, you know, that you feel that personal connection with, cling to the Holy Spirit. And the Holy Spirit might speak to you by opening the course and, you know, reading lines. There might be something else that comes, you know, in another way, whether it's through another person. I mean, as I say, in From Anxiety to Love, I'm a big fan of earthly therapy, because sometimes, you know, like the Holy Spirit will speak through another person. So whatever you feel, I have, and you may have seen this already, but I have on my bedroom wall at the foot of my bed, so I can always see it when I wake up, I call it my grounding board, and it's a number of, it's Jesus in the middle. There's Buddha. There's St. Christopher. There's a bunch of angels and saints that are on there that I feel a strong connection with. And there have been times when I'm like at the board, like help. And so anything that you can cling to as a guide, as your, you know, I'm talking again, Holy Spirit, Jesus, talk to them constantly, because what we're building, a term, I was walking with a friend of mine and a term came to me as we were speaking. It's about finding an inner anchor, and the Holy Spirit or Jesus, or again, whoever it is, all of these are inner anchors that we have to learn how to tether ourselves to when we feel we're just getting tossed about by the world in, you know, any number of ways. So that's my best advice, is, you know, make the Holy Spirit your inner anchor, center the Holy Spirit, cling to the Holy Spirit, because that's the one sure thing. And nothing else is stable here. Nothing else is stable. And so, and I know sometimes we need reprieve, and again, we'll get to a period of reprieve that comes. That, see, that's why I love this section, because if you're in that period of doing undoing, look what's ahead. You're going to have a period of settling down. It's coming. So that, this to me has always been comforting to me, because it gives me that map that, like, okay, things are really bad right now, but there's a light. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. It's coming. So Dave, I'm holding steady for you and with you, and I'm joined with you. And I trust completely.
Thank you.
With all confidence that you're coming through this, and you are and will be, as the Course says, quite unharmed.
Can I make just a quick suggestion to Dave?
Sure.
Chapter 17, All Inclusive Faith. Dave, ooh, take a look at it.
Ooh.
There is one. I also have, you know, a half a dozen different anchors. And this one in this chapter, All Inclusive Faith, the power set in you, in whom the Holy Spirit's goal has been established, is so far beyond your little conception of the infinite that you have no idea how great the strength that goes with you. And you can use this in perfect safety, yet for all its might, so great, it reaches past the stars and to the universe that lies beyond them. Your little faithlessness can make it useless if you would use faithlessness instead. Mm. So it's always that choice between faith and faithlessness. I have to literally, I'm going to have it tattooed. it always comes down to that.
Paula?
Yes.
I love your, I was thinking of this time of turmoil. I was thinking about the ego and how vicious and how, it's just our ego trying to
pull us back, keep us focused on it. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's it. Thank you, Paula. And thank you, Christine.
Thank you, Paula.
Thank you, Dave. So,
just a quick comment. Oh,
yes, Julie.
This discussion of the period of undoing makes me think of years ago, I was in therapy working through something very painful, and I was crying, and I said to my therapist, I feel like I'm falling apart. And she looked at me and said, maybe you're coming together. And it was so powerful at the time. I didn't have a clue what she meant. Now I do.
Wow.
Just wanted to share that.
Oh, Julie, thank you. That's absolutely beautiful. That's really powerful. I know I've felt like I'm falling apart at times, and I love how she said, maybe you're coming together. Wow. Thank you. Thank you. And we are coming together, because the falling apart, the period of undoing, is a stage in the development of trust. And we are coming together to have, this is leading us to have a rock solid foundation of trust in spirit. So let's read the next paragraph. I'm on paragraph number 4. Next, the teacher of God must go through a period of sorting out. This is always somewhat difficult because, having learned that the changes in his life are always helpful, he now must decide all things on the basis of whether they increase the helpfulness or hamper it. He will find that many, if not most, of the things he valued before will merely hinder his ability to transfer what he has learned to new situations as they arise. I want to read that sentence one more time. He will find that many, if not most, of the things he valued before will merely hinder his ability to transfer what he has learned to new situations as they arise. Because he has valued what is really valueless, he will not generalize the lesson for fear of loss and sacrifice. It takes great learning to understand that all things, events, encounters, and circumstances are helpful. It is only to the extent to which they are helpful that any degree of reality should be accorded to them in this world of illusion. The word value can apply to nothing else. And we'll pause there in this paragraph. So a period of sorting out. Think about it. We're in a growth process where we're not fully yet trusting the Holy Spirit. So when we're trying to figure out what's value and valueless, we're probably going to be doing a lot of that deciding ourselves and maybe asking the Holy Spirit and asking for guidance, but maybe either not getting super clear or just still making decisions for ourselves. We'll hear about this again later, because the Holy Spirit needs to be the one to do the sorting. So in this period, we might be the ones to perhaps do the sorting. This one sentence is tough. It takes great learning to understand that all things, events, encounters, and circumstances are helpful. It's only to the extent to which they are helpful that any degree of reality should be accorded to them. You know, that's a tough sentence. What I do with that sentence is I feel like a lot of the course teachings are for you, like the reader, like this is about your relationship with what's on this page. This is not a teaching to take and apply to somebody else or to say to somebody else's circumstances, oh, well, what you're going through is ultimately helpful, because then what is that? What happens there? That's when we're weaponizing the course. So I feel like this is a teaching that we have to sit with ourselves, with the Holy Spirit, and see what this teaching means to us, because I think it can be very harmful if we try to take that and apply it to another person and their circumstances. So I guess that's all I'll say about the period of sorting out. So again, period of undoing, still, you know, very early in our development of trust, sorting out. And now we're into a period of relinquishment. But before I go to that, are there any comments or questions about paragraph number 4? Mary Beth.
Just want to, with the, there is no degree of reality in the period of sorting out. I just need to say the situation, one of the many things that was falling away, that was being pulled out from me, was my relationship with my own daughter and knowing my grandchildren. Mm. And I recognize, and that just was a real lesson, that I need to apply these truths to every situation, that there is no degree of reality. I mean, that was hard.
I'm sure. Wow.
That was hard, but I feel the love and the peace with it as well too. The necessity is not even the word, but I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if this is what you're saying, but what's coming to me in my own experience with times that I've been, I'm thinking of one time in particular, when I was really freaked out in a doctor's office. Even though I was freaking out, there was something deep down that was still steady, that was still feeling that love, that was feeling that okayness in the situation, despite the external circumstances, like a knowing that there was something deeper that was unaffected by what was happening in my experience out there. So I don't know if that's what you're hitting on, but it
is in a way, because what also happened, and I couldn't believe it, was the first time I really experienced it, is in the midst of that deep pain, mm-hmm. and emptiness, I was able to really experience and be aware of other joys in my life at the mm-hmm. same time. Mm-hmm. And it was like holding the Tao symbol, like everything at once. And it reminds me too, years ago, I used to say when I would have times of that feeling, that the light at the end of the tunnel was no longer an oncoming train. It was hope. It was hope.
Oh, I love that. That's really powerful. That's a really powerful image. Oh, thank you, Mary Beth. I love that. Light at the end of the tunnel, not a train. It's hope. That's awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, let's read that, the next paragraph, our period of relinquishment, paragraph number 5. The third stage through which the teachers of God must go can be called a period of relinquishment. If this is interpreted as giving up the desirable, it will engender enormous conflict. Few teachers of God escape this distress entirely. There is, however, no point in sorting out the valuable from the valueless unless the next obvious step is taken. The third step is rarely, if ever, begun until the second step is complete. Therefore, the period of overlap is apt to be one in which the teacher of God feels called upon to sacrifice his own best interests on behalf of truth. He has not realized as yet how wholly impossible such a demand would be. He can learn this only as he actually does give up the valueless. Through this, he learns that where he anticipated grief, he finds a happy lightheartedness instead. Where he thought something was asked of him, he finds a gift bestowed on him. And I'm wondering if we can all relate to that. I can't think of a specific example, but I can relate to this feeling of not wanting to let something go, like being like really, really tightly clinging onto something, finally letting go, relinquishing. And it's like, oh my gosh, I'm feeling joy. Like this isn't the big, you know, the big loss or the big pain that I thought it was going to be. It's actually okay. And there's gifts there. There's miracles there. There's synchronicities maybe that show up. So this period of relinquishment is about, all right, I'm letting it go now. Like I am relinquishing this. I am releasing this. Not, again, if there's any fear of sacrifice there, that's just the ego saying, nope, we're not going to trust Holy Spirit. Because we're never asked to sacrifice anything. Again, we've invited the Holy Spirit in. We have asked the Holy Spirit to repurpose everything. And so it's like, here you go. You know, I'm willing to hand this over because I want that happy lightheartedness instead of this, you know, grip that I have on whatever it may be. So that's period of relinquishment. Any thoughts or comments or questions about that? Michelle.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you so much for all that. I'm just relating to everyone, Dave. I can relate to you in terms of what I've been going through in the last almost a year, I guess. And that idea about what you were just saying about sacrifice, like that keeps coming up. I know I just went through a period of like really, really, really intense fear where I couldn't even sit with the Holy Spirit. I had to tap all the time. Mm-hmm. And now I finally got to a point where I can actually sit with the Holy Spirit. And I just was wondering if you might be able to comment on that looking with the Holy Spirit, because I have found it quite comforting and I'm relieved that I'm finally there where I can sit with the Holy Spirit. And you have a podcast on your website. I don't remember the name of the lady, but I think she was an English lady. And you were talking about sitting up with the Holy Spirit, like sitting head up, you know, chest out. And that's what I do. And I ask the Holy Spirit to shine your light now on what I'm feeling. And I'm usually guilt, like this is what's coming up for me now. And then I just like, yeah, I'm willing to look at this with you. And then I just let it. And sometimes I can be there for half an hour. Sometimes, you know, it can be an hour, but just, it has been helpful. I was just wondering if you could maybe touch on that, because I think it's another really helpful tool, but it can be extremely uncomfortable as well. And then I keep just reminding myself, thank you, Holy Spirit, for shining your light on this. Thank you that I'm not looking at this alone. Mm-hmm. But that whole idea of sacrifice keeps coming up because I think I'm in the guilt So that's where the ego kind of tends to go, is this idea that there's going to be a suffering, or there's going to be a sacrifice, or if you're going to learn this, it's going to be another trial. You're going to have, you know, that kind of thing. I'm catching my throat now as I'm talking. Okay. I won't talk anymore now.
Oh, no. Thank you for talking. Sorry. And thank you for, no, I value everything that you just said and completely relate to it. First of all, remember that when we are offering something, you know, to the Holy Spirit, that it's always an exchange. It's never just like you're giving something and it's poof gone. It's always an exchange. And that exchange, what we get back again, is this happy lightheartedness, or I mean, that's one form it might show up. It's some form of a glimpse of remembering the truth, you know, that we're not bodies. So that's always been a helpful thought for me about these like fears of sacrifice. In terms of what you said about guilt and looking with the Holy Spirit, and that, by the way, that podcast was with Natasha Black. That was a great conversation. I brought this up as you were speaking. This is a little drawing that I did. I'm just gonna share my screen really quick of how I picture looking with the Holy Spirit. Can everybody see this? So the guilt, whatever it is this tangled mess of ick, you know, whatever the thing is, it's the ick. And I picture myself sitting alongside the Holy Spirit, or the Holy Spirit right behind me, and we're looking at it together. It's like the Holy Spirit is shining the light down on whatever the thing is. And, you know, the Holy Spirit is going to look straight past that ick, because it's not real. You know, it's not of the Holy Spirit. It's of the ego. And so this, to me, has been also very helpful, because when there are things that I like don't want to let go, for whatever reason, sacrifice, fear, I'm like, okay, I don't want to hand it over, but I'll look at it with the Holy Spirit. Because looking at it, you know, we're just sitting here together looking at it. So this is just the visual that I just, you know, sketched out of what this to me is like with this idea of looking with the Holy Spirit. To me, it requires less effort than handing something over, because with handing something over, you know, I know I've had at least the expectation that when I hand it over, I'm not going to think about it anymore. But if I keep thinking about it and picking it up, it's like, oh, I got to hand it over again. But if it's continuing to surface, if I'm just willing to look at it with Holy Spirit, willing again and again, it's just that ball of ick, and I'm looking at it, you know, with the Holy Spirit. So does that help with explaining?
May I ask a question?
Yes. Joyce, one moment. Let me just make sure with Michelle, and you're next.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that. I love that image. And I've kind of tried to image that. I guess I'm just like, I mean, you still are feeling it though, right? Even though, mm-hmm, like you're looking at it, because, mm-hmm, it would be nice to be able to just go like this and put it there, mm-hmm, but yeah, it's right here.
You're
but
still
I
feeling
do envision
it.
That the Holy Spirit is shining the light. And I just keep reminding myself, and I'll just kind of every few minutes, I'll just be like, thank you, Holy Spirit, for shining your light on this. Thank you that I'm not looking at this alone. Thank you, angels, for surrounding me with your love. And beautiful. I'm just letting it.
Beautiful. I have one other thing I want to add, and then Joyce, I just want to get this in before I forget. I think I've shared this on previous study groups, but this idea of looking with and feeling it, did I tell you all about my gong bath experience? I was teaching a retreat with Jennifer Hadley and Lisa Natoli. It's 2 years ago. And right before we were about to do this gong bath, so the yoga teacher had this giant gong and was just going to be like banging the gong for about an hour, where we just laid there around the gong and you just felt the vibration and the beautiful, you know, heard the beautiful sound. A family member texted me right before that experience, and it was a trigger for me. And I said, Jesus, I am going to stay with this feeling during this gong bath, and I'm going to look at it with you until something budges. I think I did share this not too long ago. And for 45 minutes, I was in that feeling of being triggered, and but determined to not turn away, to look at it with Jesus and to stay with it. And 45 minutes in, it was as if a plug got pulled out of a drain and the grievance flushed. It was like whoosh. And what came through was this burning love for my family member and this just desire for healing and willingness. And it was one of the most beautiful experiences, you know, that I've had. So that's just another idea about looking with and feeling it at the same time. Joyce, sorry to make you wait, Joyce.
No, sure. Thank you. You said you identify that as a bold eek, but I thought in your book, you mentioned radical honesty. Mm-hmm. So I thought you need to identify what that eek is and look it with the Holy Spirit. So do you need to identify it or you don't need to?
Great question, Joyce. I love that question. I feel it is helpful to identify what that ick is. Whether it's a feeling of guilt, even if it's the feeling that's not really attached to anything, because sometimes in my experience, I would just have free-floating anxiety. It wasn't really attached to anything. I would just be in intense anxiety, but I could still name it. You know, I could still name what I was feeling. So the minimum is to try to at least name the feeling. Okay. You don't necessarily have to figure out more than that, but naming it is getting honest about how you feel and having that radical honesty with Holy Spirit. So that was a great connection.
So you try, but it's not necessary.
You know, like in some cases it might not be necessary, but for me, it's usually been necessary. It's usually been helpful.
Okay.
Thank you. I don't think it's like a blanket, like, you know, you have to, because in some cases we might not know, but in my experience, it's been helpful to name it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joyce. Oh, wonderful. Thank you everybody for your shares. We won't finish this section tonight, which is totally, totally fine, but, or maybe we will. We'll see. Let's read paragraph number 6. Now comes a period of settling down. This is a quiet time in which the teacher of God rests a while in reasonable peace. Now he consolidates his learning. Now he begins to see the transfer value of what he has learned. Its potential is literally staggering. And the teacher of God is now at the point in his progress at which he can see in it his whole way out. Give up what you do not want and keep what you do. How simple is the obvious? And how easy to do? The teacher of God needs this period of respite. He has not yet come as far as he thinks. Yet, when he is ready to go on, he goes with mighty companions beside him. Now he rests a while and gathers them before going on. He will not go on from here alone. I actually do feel prompted to keep reading. We are gonna finish this. The next stage is indeed a period of unsettling. So we've rested and now we're in another period of unsettling. Now must the teacher of God understand that he did not really know what was valuable and what was valueless. All he really learned so far was that he did not want the valueless and that he did want the valuable. Yet his own sorting out was meaningless in teaching him the difference. In other words, our intellect is not going to figure it out. The idea of sacrifice, so central to his own thought system, had made it impossible for him to judge. He thought he had learned willingness, but now he sees that he does not know what the willingness is for. And now he must attain a state that may remain impossible for a long, long time. He must learn to lay all judgment aside and ask only that he be taught what he really wants in every circumstance. Were not each step in this direction so heavily reinforced, it would be hard indeed. I'm going to finish the last paragraph and then we'll talk about all three. And finally, there is a period of achievement. It is here that learning is consolidated. And what was seen as merely shadows before becomes solid gains, to be counted on in all emergencies as well as tranquil times. Indeed, the tranquility is their result, the outcome of honest learning, consistency of thought, and full transfer. This is the stage of real peace, for here is heaven's state fully reflected. From here, the way to heaven is open and easy. In fact, it is here. Who would go anywhere if peace of mind is already complete? And who would seek to change tranquility for something more desirable? What could be more desirable than this? Oh, so let's recap these. Paragraph 6. Actually, I just want to do a quick review. We have first our period of undoing, a period of sorting out, a period of relinquishment, a period of settling down. So this is the first paragraph we just read. So paragraph number 6, our learning thus far gets consolidated. We are able to rest. And when we go on with mighty companions alongside of us. Obviously, I mean, it's mighty companions is not in capital letters. So I feel like it's us. It's, you know, all of us on this group. It's the spiritually minded friends that we make along the way, the fellow course students that we make. We rest a while, and from here, you know, we aren't going on alone. This next period is a period of unsettling, in that our development of trust is growing. And now, instead of us trying to do the sorting of what's valuable and valueless, which is what I meant when I said, you know, our intellect is not going to get it, we can't do this alone. The Holy Spirit, it's that three-letter word that shows up throughout A Course in Miracles, that the Holy Spirit does things for us. The Holy Spirit chooses for God for us. The Holy Spirit, oh my gosh, there's so many references. I'm not even bringing up the other ones, but the Holy Spirit is choosing for us over and over. So this stage, this period of unsettling, is just when now it's like, okay, wait a second, you know, maybe things are kicking up again, but this time I'm going to let the Holy Spirit, you know, I'm going to be talking to the Holy Spirit more. I'm going to be calling on the Holy Spirit more. I want the Holy Spirit to do the sorting. And this at the end of this paragraph, it says, the state that is coming next, you know, depends on learning to lay all judgment aside, and ask only that we be taught what we really want in every circumstance. Were not each step in this direction so heavily reinforced, it would be hard indeed. So every time we say, Holy Spirit, I'm willing to not judge, or I'm willing to, like, you know, I'm willing to have you judge this for me. Every time we choose for the Holy Spirit, that decision is reinforced heavily. And so it doesn't have to be hard, but this is what we're learning, literally in every situation that we're in, to learn to lay judgment aside, because that then leads to this period of achievement where now we don't have to be like, oh, right, I have the note on my wall to turn to the Holy Spirit. It's now automatic. It's now part of who we are. We've made the Holy Spirit a habit. We have gains that we can count on in all emergencies, as well as tranquil times. And this is talking about the complete transfer of trust. I do think that these stages, I feel like it's holographic. It's like we cycle and recycle through these stages many times with different things, while we're also simultaneously going through all of them once and coming to a complete transfer of trust. So I feel like all of that is happening with these stages. So take comfort in knowing that we get periods of respite, we have periods of achievement, and this is all just about developing trust. So the more we talk to the Holy Spirit and make the Holy Spirit a habit, that's only going to be helpful. Dave, were you going to say something or no?
No, it wasn't.
Oh, okay. Very good. So that's the section on trust. We'll start with honesty next week, but anybody have any final comments or questions?
Yes,
Paula.
Bravo.
Woohoo.
this was fabulous tonight. Absolutely fabulous.
Oh, I love this section and I love all of your shares. It adds so much just practical real life examples to all of these teachings. So thank you. Thank you for sharing. Thank everybody for sharing. I appreciate it. All right. Yay, Paul, I'm glad you could be here too. Love you all. Thank you so much for your presence and I'll see you all next week.
Have a great week.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye, Carol and Pat. Bye-bye. Bye, Maureen. Bye, Donna. Bye, Wendy. Bye, John.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Fanny. Bye, Michelle.
Bye. Have Christine. A good week.
You too. Bye. Bye, Donna. Bye, everyone. Sorry if I didn't say your name. Goodbye.